Today is Family Day. In our look at the great proverbs that God's given us, the great words of wisdom, the great lessons that He's taught us in the book of Proverbs on how we can grow in our wisdom and our relationship with God to have a fuller and more successful life, we've been looking at various relationships that are highlighted throughout the book of Proverbs. Last week we talked about the most important relationship, and that is our relationship with God. And this week we're going to talk about our next most important relationship, and that is with our family, the people to whom we belong, the people who belong to us, the people who we see on a regular basis and we live with. Then next week we'll talk about friends and other people, and then the week after that we'll talk about relations at work and just the whole aspect of work. So that's where we're going, and kind of moving on through this. Through this book, again, in our discussion last week on the relationship that we have with God, we first talked a little bit about who God is and saw what the book of Proverbs says about who God is. And we saw that He's a creator, number one. He's the one who created us and everything that we know, feel, see, hear, touch, everything that exists. And we see that when He did this creation, when He created everything, He did so using His infinite wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. That wisdom, knowledge, and understanding is what He wants to share with us. He wants us to use His wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to grow in our relationships with Him and to have fullness of life. We see that the various proverbs support our understanding of various aspects of who God is or characteristics of Him, such as He is omniscient, meaning that He knows everything. He perceives everything. He's aware of everything. He's omnipresent, meaning He's everywhere, in all places. He's omnipotent, meaning He's all-powerful. There's nothing more powerful than God. And He's sovereign. He's in charge. He's in control. And that being in charge and in control is really what we need to realize. And what we need to recognize and how we need to approach our relationship with Him is by putting our fear and our trust in Him. That's what fear of the Lord is realization that God is in control. And putting your trust in the Lord is turning yourself over to that and getting yourself out of the way, keeping yourself out of trying to be in control, as we so often try to do. We recognize, and Proverbs tells us, that God not only sees what we do, okay, because He's omnipresent and omniscient, but He also sees our motives, why it is that we do what we do. He sees our heart, the foundation of what leads to our motives, and He sees our very soul. He sees to the depths far beyond what we can see in ourselves. He knows us better than we can know ourselves. In this relationship that we have with God, we're called to fear and trust Him that we just talked about, looking to Him to be in control. He will, as we do that, He promises to bless and to care for us. Our relationship with Him, as we live in a right relationship with Him, that leads to wisdom, and wisdom helps us grow in our relationship with God, and it continues to build on each other, as we've talked about in past weeks. We talked a good bit last week about the doctrine of retribution, or all the proverbs that talk about how blessings are promised for the righteous. Lots of blessings, okay? Long life, riches, honor, everything. And punishment is promised for the wicked. But we talked about how our everyday life kind of shows exceptions to that. Well, number one, we've talked from the very beginning that proverbs are rules of thumb and not guarantees that you will always find exceptions to proverbs. But we often seem to understand or recognize that, well, you know, the righteous suffer. They die young. And same with the wicked, but the wicked, we see plenty of examples of the wicked prospering. And so we talked about various aspects to help us understand really what the Proverbs were saying. And, you know, part of it is that what we call success here in this life is really not success at all and not real success. And there's much more. There's hope for the righteous. There is a peace in this life for the righteous. And those things, the wicked have no hope. The wicked create their own problems and live with the repercussions of those. So there are some aspects of that that we see. Another aspect that we see is the whole Romans 3 explanation that Paul gave us, and that is there's none righteous, no, not one. And Proverbs bore that out too, that the reason bad things happen to good people is because there are no good people. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So we live in a sinful world. We receive the repercussions of that sin. But yet, as we grow closer to God in a more right relationship with Him, then we recognize and we experience the peace of God, the positive life and the blessings that He's got in store for us. And that's what these Proverbs were referring to. Now, as we get closer to God, we also recognize the blessings that He's given us and recognize the undeserved blessings, the mercy and grace of God that He showers on us each and every day. We have a great relationship with our Creator. You know, many people, you've got deists and you've got other religions that talk about a God that created everything and ran off. But no, this Creator loves us, He knows us, He cares for us, He blesses us, and He wants to live with us. He wants to walk with us. He wants to have a continual relationship with us. Okay? And He wants us to have the same with Him and love Him back. Okay? One of the blessings that God's given us, each and every one of us, is a family. Now, some of us have bigger families than others. Some of us may not be close to our family anymore. But there's always, you know, we were born from someone. We had a mother and a father. And a great blessing is that of the family. And so the book of Proverbs talks a lot about the relationship of family. And it's the family that builds the house. So the righteous, those who have a right relationship with God, how does that impact their home? Proverbs 12 verse 7 says, "Wicked men are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous stands firm." So the house of the righteous stands firm. So we have a firm foundation as we live in a righteous home. Now, a home and a lot of what we'll talk about in the family deals with your classical definition of a mother, a father, or a couple, a husband and wife, and then often them being a mother and a father to children. So those are the kind of topics that we're going to talk about today that fit into this house of the righteous that stands firm. Now, as you pursue a spouse, okay, before you're married, how does God fit into that picture? Proverbs 18, verse 22. "He who finds a wife finds what is good and receives favor from the Lord." So if you've been blessed with a spouse, then you've been blessed by God. You've received favor from the Lord. You've found what is good. Proverbs 19, verse 14. "Houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from the Lord." Okay? So you may have things that you got from your parents. You may have the ability and skills to earn a living that some of that came from your parents. But a spouse, a prudent spouse, a faithful spouse, a spouse who has a relationship with God, that comes from God. That's a blessing from God. Okay? So a prudent wife is from the Lord. Proverbs 11, verse 22. "Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion." Okay, just picture that. You may already have. Okay? A gold ring in a pig's snout. It doesn't matter what you do to pretty it up. It's still a pig. Okay? It's still going to wallow in the mud. It's still going to smell. It's still a pig. A gold ring is not going to do anything to change that pig. "Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion. Okay, so beauty may be there, but that's nothing compared to a woman who has wisdom from God. Okay, so wisdom from God is much more beautiful and meaningful and greater than physical beauty, is what that proverb is saying. Now, as we look at the spouse, and a lot of proverbs are obviously written from this, the paternalistic culture that we had of the Hebrews was built around the men, and so the lessons that are given here are given to the men, but you can also, as I've done so far as we've talked, just substitute spouse for wife, okay? And you're dealing with some of the relationship. Now, what we do have, though, in chapter 31, the very last chapter of the book, is we have a poem about the wife of noble character. This may be the heading that you've got in your NIV Bible. We don't know who wrote this. It's an interesting poem because each verse begins with the next letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Okay? And you may have seen some English poems that way. First verse starts with an A, the next verse starts with a B, the next verse starts with a C. And so it's kind of a creative thing that to kind of walk you through. And each verse starts with a different letter. So as a result, some of the themes kind of bounce around. It starts out and introduces, but then some of the topics kind of bounce around because of the letters that get them there. But there's a lot of great stuff in here, and in fact, I understand at our church at Gloria Day, a few months ago, that was the topic of one of the women's Bible studies on Wednesday morning, is this poem. So let's take a look. We'll just briefly cover it. If you went through that women's Bible study, if you've been through one of these Bible studies, you may be able to get a little deeper than what I'll bring us today here. But it starts out talking about this wife of noble character. And it starts out talking about how valuable she is. Verses 10 to 12. A wife of noble character, who can find? She's worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. So, she's more precious than rubies, more precious than anything physical, anything that you might value. A wife of noble character is very, very precious. She brings confidence to her husband. She brings completeness. And she brings good. Okay? So great benefits in a wife of noble character. So what is a wife of noble character? What are some of the characteristics of a wife of noble character? First, a few scattered verses, 13, 17, 19, and 27. Says, she selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. In her hand she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. So that's talking about spinning yarn. And then 27, she watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. So what do all these have to say? She's very skillful, capable of doing all sorts of things, and very hardworking for her family. So skillful and hardworking for her family. And now, 14, 16, and 24. She's like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. So you see, she's very enterprising. She's enterprising in order to help provide for her family. She'll go to great distances, great lengths to take care of her family. 15 and 18, she gets up while it's dark, and she provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. So she'll take care of her family from early in the morning to late at night. Early in the morning to late at night. Okay, very dedicated. Verse 20, she opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. She's got a great care for others. 21, 22, and 25. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She's clothed in fine linen and purple. She's clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. So she ensures that her family is well provided for and safe and secure. Okay, she ensures that her family is well provided for and secure. 26, she speaks with wisdom and faithful instruction is on her tongue. So she's a wise and loving counselor. 23, her husband is respected at the city gate where he takes a seat among the elders of the land. And the city gate is where the elders of the town and the area would come together and conduct official business and things like that. So the wise people would be there here. And here it says her husband is there. What does that have to do with her? Because she empowers her family to be the best they can be. She empowers her family to be the best they can be. And then verse 30, the charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Now that's just like the Proverbs 11:22 we read earlier. Okay, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So she fears the Lord. How does the family of a wife of noble character feel about her? 28 to 31. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned. Let her works bring her praise at the city gate. So she's praised by her family and by others. Okay? She's greatly loved, greatly respected. Is your wife that way? Is your mother that way? Are you that way? Something to think about. So great, a wife of noble character is a great blessing to her family. What we've talked about so far is the relationship of husbands and wives and how they are blessings for the righteous. Well, is that always the way it is? Well, take a look at page 2. We're going to talk about husbands and wives, punishment for the wicked. Okay? Well, what does Proverbs have to say about that? Well, first thing, how important is a peaceful home? Chapter 17, verse 1. Better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. Okay? A peaceful home is very valuable. Better to have little with a peaceful home and you'll have a better life than if you had much with a lot of quarreling, strife, trouble, etc. So a peaceful home is very, very important. Now, not all homes are peaceful. Some homes are made unpeaceful or made strife-filled, troublesome, by the husband. How dangerous is the quarrelsome husband to a marriage? Proverbs 26, verse 21. As charcoal to embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. So he kindles strife. He makes matters worse. He aggravates the situation. Just as when you add wood to the fire, that makes the fire grow even hotter. As you add charcoal to embers, that makes them grow even hotter. And, you know, it's adding gasoline to a flame. It burns things up. And so a quarrelsome husband is going to make matters worse. Okay? Aggravates the situation. Alright, what about the other side? How dangerous is the quarrelsome wife to a marriage? Proverbs 27, 15 to 16. A quarrelsome wife is like a constant dripping on a rainy day. You just see how that burns on your nerves, right? Drip, 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 drip. Restraining her is like restraining the wind. Okay, you can't shut her up. You can't stop her. A quarrelsome wife cannot be stopped here. Or grasping oil with a hand. You just can't do anything about it. Okay? So a quarrelsome wife is likewise troublesome and you get aggravated because you can't do much about it. Proverbs 21, verse 9 and verse 19, better to live on the corner of a roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered wife. Okay? So, lots of horrible things are much better than having to live with a quarrelsome spouse, whether a wife or a husband. Okay? Better to live on a roof or in a desert than with a quarrelsome spouse. Well, there's some contrast here that, some of the Proverbs are written in terms of contrast. Some contrast of the wife from God versus the wife of trouble. Proverbs 12, verse 4. A wife of noble character is her husband's crown. Okay, that wife of noble character that we talked about back in chapter 31. She's the pride and joy of the husband. She is the crown. She's one that really builds him up, right? But a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones. A disgraceful wife will tear a man down. It's like decay in his bones. 14 verse 1. The wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands the foolish one tears hers down. And you've seen this. You've seen how wise women, wise men will build their home up, build their family up, and everyone benefits. But you've also maybe seen those who are unwise, who create their own problems, destroy their home, destroy their family, tears theirs down. Okay, so there's a big contrast there. Now, when you also talk about husbands and wives, you talk about the importance of that bond that God made staying intact and staying unthreatened. And Proverbs, as you might imagine, brings that out. Now, one of the warnings it gives is the warning to a husband who strays, who looks around. Proverbs 27, verse 8, like a bird that strays from its nest is a man who strays from his home. Okay? So a man who strays from his home is going to be subject to all sorts of temptations, he's vulnerable to temptation. Security isn't there, and it's unprotected being away from home. Okay, and away from home, the big danger is that of the adulteress. Proverbs 22, verse 14. The mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit. He who is under the Lord's wrath will fall in it. So the seductive words of the adulteress is like a deep pit. And those who fall into adultery are under the Lord's wrath. Okay? Now the word adulteress, there's not a Hebrew word that says adulteress. Instead, what it is strange woman. So the mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. The word strange woman, zarah, as the word strange, is any woman other than your wife is what's being referred to here. And hence, adulteress. Proverbs 5, the whole chapter of Proverbs 5 is a warning. Look at verse 1. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen well to my words of insight. And then he goes on and warns his son about the adulteress. We'll just read verses 3 to 6 here. The lips of an adulteress, the lips of a strange woman, a woman who is not your wife, drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. Okay, so very attractive, very tempting, right? Looks very sweet. Adultery looks sweet, right? But in the end, she's as bitter as gall. There's no sweetness to it at all, okay? It's very bitter. Sharp as a double-edged sword. It hurts. Adultery hurts, brings pain. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths are crooked, but she doesn't know it. She knows it not. So adultery may look sweet, but it's bitter, it's painful, and it kills life. Okay? Just a quick, clean summary of what he's saying here. He also talks in chapter 7, goes further into it, into the same topic. Okay? Again, you see 7 verse 1, my son, keep my words toward your commands, and then we'll read just verses 4 and 5. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your kinsman. They will keep you from the adulteress, the strange woman, from the wayward wife. Now the word there is foreigner. Okay, so that's a wife of someone else who's gone out of her home with her seductive words. Okay, so how is the adulteress to be avoided? What did it say there in verse 4? Wisdom and understanding. Use your head. Wisdom and understanding can help give you control when there's these temptations that are that you're faced with. So, instead of adultery, what does Solomon recommend? Go back to chapter 5, verse 15 through 19. Drink water from your own cistern. Okay, what's a cistern? It's a tank that collected water, okay, rainwater and all that. Running water from your own well. Okay, so in other words, don't go somewhere else to drink somebody else's water. Drink your water. What's this talking about? Well, this is chapter 5 talking about staying away from adultery. So, stay with your own wife, right? Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? In other words, if you go into adultery, that may lead your wife into adultery too, right? Let them be yours alone. Let these streams of water be yours alone. Let your wife be yours alone. Never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain, okay, your wife be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Okay? So, instead of following temptations of adultery, enjoy and love your spouse. Enjoy and love your spouse alone. Okay? So, we have some very strong warnings against adultery here in the book of Proverbs. Now, the family then, we have the fathers and the mothers and the husbands and wives that we've talked about. Now we have father, mother, and children. And let's look and see what Proverbs has to say about that. How does the faithfulness, okay, again, we'll look at it the same way. First we'll talk about the blessings for the righteous and then punishment for the wicked. So the good side and the bad side. First, the blessings for the righteous. How does the faithfulness of a parent affect his children? Proverbs 13, verse 22. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. So a good man leaves an inheritance for his descendants, leaves a legacy. Okay, what kind of legacy are you leaving? Okay, what kind of legacy have your parents or your grandparents left for you? Is it one based on a relationship with God? Is it one based on righteousness that then has impacted you? Proverbs 14, verse 26. He who fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for his children, it'll be a refuge. So, he who fears the Lord provides a refuge for his children. His children can feel safe and protected in a household that fears the Lord, that has a right relationship with God. And then Proverbs 20, verse 7, the righteous man leads a blameless life. Blessed are his children after him. So the children of a righteous man are blessed. Blessed by that relationship with God, but also blessed in many other ways that God carries that blessing forward. Okay? The Old Testament talks a lot about God sharing the blessings for many, many generations to those who love Him. What is the job of a parent according to the book of Proverbs? What's the parent's responsibility to a child? Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it. Now, a parent can take great comfort in this, okay? As children get older, especially as they go through their teenage years and all the struggling and pushing against the walls of the cocoon that happened then, you know, there's a limit to what a parent can do at that time. But as you have prepared your children as they've grown up when they were younger, and ingrained love for the Lord in them and taught them right and wrong, then that's part of them. And that will help guide them. And train a child in the way he should go, and when he grows up, he won't depart from it. So that also brings out, for those of you with young children, brings out the importance of training them. That's a key responsibility of a parent, is teaching them the right way to go. Giving them wisdom, right? Just as we talked about. Look at verse 15. Folly is bound up in the heart of the child, right? The child, when we talked 2 weeks ago about the simple, the mocker, and the fool, those who have no wisdom or have limited wisdom and need to grow in wisdom, the child doesn't have the wisdom because they don't have the experiences and haven't been taught. And that's what the parent's responsibility is to drive them from being the simple without wisdom to being the wise with wisdom. So, folly is bound up in the heart of the child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Okay? So a parent is called upon to discipline their children to help teach them God's wisdom, to help them grow out of the natural foolishness that they're born with. Okay? And that discipline takes many forms, but that's what teaching them self-control is a big part of a parent's job. Chapter 29, verse 15. The rod of correction imparts wisdom. So as you discipline your children, that gives them wisdom. But a child left to himself disgraces his mother. Okay? So if you don't discipline your children, they're not going to grow in wisdom, and they'll be a disgrace. They won't move from being the simple to the wise. They'll move from being the simple to the fool or the mocker. Or staying simple. Chapter 13, verse 24. He who spares the rod hates his child, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. He who does not discipline his child is showing a hateful neglect. Okay? But he who takes care to discipline his child. Now this doesn't mean again, it's taking care to discipline, is careful to discipline. In other words, using discipline and teaching and guidance to lead them in the right direction. This isn't going off half-cocked when you're having a bad day. That has nothing to do with wisdom, okay? Wisdom has to do with pointing them in the right direction, teaching children the lessons that they need to be able to grow wise. So, discipline is a purposeful act of love, and it takes work. It's not easy, okay? The easy way out is neglect, is not disciplining, and no discipline is a loveless neglect, okay? A parent who loves their child is going to want to see them grow in wisdom and is going to take the effort and the work that it takes to discipline their child, to teach them the right way to live. Why is that important? Proverbs 19, verse 18. Discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. So discipline gives a child hope for life. Okay? A lack of discipline will destroy that child's life, will not allow them to have the life that they could have otherwise, that a disciplining parent, that a teaching parent would give. Proverbs 23:13-14 goes a little further, says, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he's not going to die. Punish him with a rod and you'll save his soul from death. So not only does discipline help bring them wisdom to know what's right and wrong in this life, but what is true wisdom is God's wisdom, is walking in fear of the Lord, in a relationship with God, putting your faith and trust in Him, that not only saves for this life, brings fullness of life in this life, but it brings eternal life. It saves his soul from death. So, that is a parent's responsibility, is to train a child in the way they should go, disciplining them, teaching them self-control, teaching them love, faith, relationship with God, with Jesus Christ, and giving them that full life that God wants for them. All right, that's a parent's responsibility to a child. What's a child's responsibility to a parent? Chapter 1, verses 8 to 9. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. There'll be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. So listen and follow your parents' teaching. Okay? They'll come with you wherever you go. Those of you who are adults, whichever, you know, this is an adult Bible study, so you're probably an adult listening to this. What parts of your parents' teaching do you kind of run into and as a garland or a chain around your neck that say, oh wow, okay, that's become part of me. Boy, I'm sounding like my mom. I'm sounding like my dad. Or boy, I did this because my parents taught me that. Okay. That's what it's all about. So as a child listens to and obeys and follows their parents' teaching, then that teaching will become part of them and follow them and lead them into the right way to live. Chapter 20, verse 11. Even a child is known by his actions, by whether his conduct is pure and right. So how you act says a lot about who you are. Your actions are a window into what's in your heart, right? And how you act, how you live your life has a lot to say about who you are and how you were raised. Okay? You can, and this may be a stereotypical thing that we do, but we'll see someone and how they behave, and many times we think about how their parents have or have not trained them, right? And so that's what the Proverbs verse is saying here. And then chapter 10, verse 1, a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son grief to his mother. So as a parent raises their children into wisdom, the children that listen and obey and grow in that wisdom, that's a pride and joy, right, to the parents. But those who ignore, reject that wisdom, that's a source of grief. Well, other sources of grief, other sources of problems for the parents from the children. What kinds of children cause shame to their parents? Let's look at a few of those. 10 verse 5. He who gathers crops in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. The hard worker makes the parents proud, right? But he who sleeps during harvest, sleeping when there's work to be done. And if you've ever had to deal with the farm, when it's harvest time, that is one of the hardest working times that you have because you have a limited time window that you've got to get all the crops in, and you work long days, long hours every day, because if you don't get it in at the proper time, it's going to spoil, it's not going to be as good. So, but sleeping during harvest time, laziness. Okay, so laziness, lazy children cause shame to their parents. 15, verse 5. A fool spurns his father's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. So an obstinate child that doesn't accept or learn from discipline causes shame to their parents, causes frustration. 17, 21, 25. To have a fool for a son brings grief. There's no joy for the father of a fool. A foolish son brings grief to his father and bitterness to the one who bore him. Okay, so a foolish child causes shame and trouble and grief to a parent. 19:26, he who robs his father and drives out his mother is a son who brings shame and disgrace. So an unsupportive child, one that doesn't support or care for parents when they're in old age or in need, have a need, that's a disgrace. That causes shame to the parents. 20 verse 20. If a man curses his father or mother, his lamp will be snuffed out in pitch darkness. So an unloving child, a hateful child, that causes shame, causes trouble, causes grief to a parent. Proverbs 28, verse 7. He who keeps the law is a discerning son, but a companion of gluttons disgraces his father. A companion of gluttons disgraces his father. Now, it goes a little deeper into this in chapter 23. We'll read verses 19 to 21. Listen, my son, and be wise, and keep your heart on the right path. Do not join those who drink too much wine or gorge themselves on meat. For drunkards and gluttons become poor, and drowsiness clothes them in rags. So, lawless children, gluttons, drunkards, lazy, all that. That causes shame to the parents. And then the last one, Proverbs 30, verse 17. The eye that mocks a father, that scorns obedience to a mother, will be pecked out by the ravens of the valley and will be eaten by the vultures. Okay? A mocking child is a problem to parents. So, these children that cause disgrace, cause shame, cause trouble to their parents, what should they expect? What can they expect? Proverbs 17, verse 2. A wise servant will rule over a disgraceful son and will share the inheritance as one of the brothers. Okay, and the same thing in 11, verse 29. He who brings trouble on his family will inherit only wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise. So a disgraceful child will lose the relationship in the family. Okay? Here it's referring to the inheritance, the legacy, all of that. But the relationship that a child could have in a family will be lost, will be negated by all these shameful acts, all these things that create problems for the parents. Some other insights that Proverbs gives us into the family. Now, some of these are pretty, they don't directly refer to the family, but think about them from a family perspective. What do these Proverbs say? How do they apply to family relationships? Proverbs 10, verse 12. Hatred stirs up dissension, but love covers all wrongs. Think about that in your family. What does hatred, when hatred shows its face in your family, what does that do? That creates big problems for the family. It stirs up dissension. It creates problems. On the other hand, love removes problems, right? It promotes forgiveness. It covers up wrongs. How many times is a parent wronged by their children and they just kind of overlook it because of the great love that they have for them? Okay, so hatred stirs up dissension, but love covers all wrongs. Chapter 11, 17. A kind man benefits himself, but a cruel man brings trouble on himself. So apply that to the family. A kind man benefits his family. A kind family benefits themselves. But a cruel man brings trouble on his family. So cruelty causes trouble. You think of an over-strict disciplinarian father that is not disciplining for the sake of imparting God's wisdom and teaching a child in the right way to go, but rather disciplining out of, I had a bad day today and I'm going to take it out on somebody kind of thing. And that's cruelty, and that causes trouble. On the other hand, kindness brings great benefits. Okay, and benefits to the family and benefits to the person themselves. Proverbs 13:10. Pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. 11:2 also says, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. So pride leads to troubles. It breeds quarrels. Okay, thinking I'm better than everybody else, say I'm the father of this family, you're going to do it because I say so, right? But humbly listening to others is wise. Humility is wise. That helps in a family as well. Proverbs 15, verse 18. A hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. Tempers. Tempers create problems. Tempers are a big source of problems in families, right? And a hot temper will build conflict, will stir up dissension, will create take a tinder box and just create a huge flame out of it, right? But patience. Patience calms even difficult situations. Okay, a patient man will calm even a quarrel when there is a fire blaring in the family. Patience can calm that down and extinguish that fire of tempers. And then Proverbs 20, verse 22. Don't say, "I'll pay you back for this wrong." Instead, wait for the Lord and He'll deliver you. So don't seek revenge. Okay? Vengeance. Taking vengeance, taking revenge in a family, that just builds on itself, right? You know, just think of the two young kids in the back seat of a car going on a trip. One of them kind of pokes the other, and the other pinches the other, and the other kind of pushes the other, and the other slugs the other, and they get into a big brawl out fight, right? Okay, because it's all based on revenge. And but don't seek revenge. Instead, look to God when offended. God will give you a peace about it, right? Okay, so those are some comments from the book of Proverbs about how we can enjoy and benefit from the relationships in the families where God has placed us. Okay, so you've got your quiz there on page 4. I'll let you work through that on your own, and you can look to the answers on the website under the teacher notes or in the PowerPoint that's there. Okay, let's close with prayer. God, our Father, we thank you for the relationships that you've given us with the people that you've placed us in around, and especially our families. For those of us who are married, we thank you for the great blessing of our spouse. For all of us, we thank you for the blessing of our parents. And for those of us who are parents, we thank you for the great blessings of our children. And we especially thank and praise you for the forgiveness that you give us when we fail to be the loving father, husband, wife, child in our family relationships. You've shown us what it's really like because you are our loving father and you love us unconditionally in spite of what we do and in spite of the trouble that we cause you. And we thank and praise you that you forgive us and that you're there to help us renew and rebuild relationships that we might have broken. Continue to be with us. Give us your wisdom and guidance as we go through this life and experience and enjoy the relationships that you've given us. And help us, empower us to be the best spouse, parent, child that we can be. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.